Red, amber and green. It might not always feel like it, but traffic lights can speed up our journeys. So if you ever sat waiting for the lights to change, wondered how lights sync up with each other, if they change for emergency vehicles, and if there's anything you can do to get them to change to green a bit quicker, here's a user guide on traffic lights. And our guide today is Wayne King. He's a senior traffic engineer with Hutt City Council.
We shall be perfect.
Wayne, we just heard there the pedestrian crossing doing that very distinctive. You can hear it.
Audio tactile.
Now, if there's a big silver button here, and if I press that, what actually happens signal-wise when I hit that?
Okay, the controller logs your call. It says, I know you're waiting. You've told me I'm waiting, you press the button, no different to a lift.
So it's a local electronic device.
There it is over there sitting in the cabinet. We can wander over and have a look inside it.
Okay, well, we'll wait for this to change. But essentially that, so me hitting that there, oh, and there, right, the
absolutely
light's just
the
gone
same
to
as
amber.
It. Yep, yellow.
Yellow, you call it?
Yep.
And there we go, so it's safe to walk
legally
now.
Legally defined in law as yellow.
Okay, and it's on red. And we'll talk about the traffic lights in a moment and what actually...
Well, it's not on red, it's on red for the vehicles. It was on green for us.
Right, okay, technicality there. So it's going to this controller here. And then what's the time frame that the controller will then initiate a change of the lights?
It'll decide on how busy the traffic is. So it's looking for a gap in the traffic.
How does it know how to identify a gap in the traffic?
It's monitoring all the vehicles on every approach by sensors in the ground.
Sensors in the ground. Are these pressure sensors?
Nope, they're inductive sensors that sense the presence of metal.
So they're like a great big aerial, are they, that sort of sits under the tarmac?
Almost exactly.
And they, so when a metal object comes on
near it,
yep, says, oh, okay, my force or my energy here's changed a bit.
Absolutely, yep.
There's something coming
dead
to my
right
area.
Yep. The same information is being sent to the master control. We call that SCATS.
SCATS?
SCATS.
What does that stand for?
It's a thing we borrowed from the Australians. Excellent, probably world-class software running in a big computer. And it stands for Sydney Coordinated Adaptive Traffic System. And it is Sydney, yep, invented in Sydney. B, it's coordinated. So we're trying to coordinate the effect of traffic from this set of signals and the next one upstream and the one beyond that. And we're trying to do the overall best for the city.
And so these are located throughout every city in New Zealand, are they?
Yeah, on every traffic signal approach. I can't think of any example of a time-actuated set of traffic signals in New Zealand in the last 40 years.
Really? So they all traffic signals now are using this system.
Vehicle actuated.
You call it vehicle actuated.
Yep.
It detects vehicles and then uses that data to decide when to change colour.
Absolutely. Right on. Exactly. We used to have rubber sensors. The last rubber sensor pad existed in the footpath. I think the last one was actually in Wellington City, and it went about 1976.
What happens if your vehicle's made of carbon fibre or you're on a bicycle?
Bicycles we can cope with, usually. One of the most tricky ones to find is actually plastic motor scooters. It's a small change that you're looking for, and if you only put a small bit of metal there, you only get a very small change, so we're trying to hunt for those.
And so these loops, looking down the street now, how big are they?
They tend to be about 2 metres long, about 1.5 metres wide.
And it literally is a great big sort of rectangle.
It's a great big rectangular aerial.
So that says, hold on, there's a piece of metal here.
Yep.
How does the system then, and is the system located in this box or is this system somewhere else?
It's locally maintained and it makes local decisions. However, it is connected to the master computer in the sky, and the master computer in the sky will also make decisions when it needs to. It will overrule if necessary.
So there is a local programming
local
capability.
Intelligence local, the local
intelligence
and local
controller.
Yep.
And then that can be overridden by this master control that we're going to go and have a look at.
We are. and the master controller generally is trying to cope for special situations or the peak hour traffic. So right at the moment, there's absolutely nothing here. The local controller will be making those decisions. It will be responding very quickly, very locally, to the local conditions. In the evening peak, we don't want to respond to local conditions. We want to keep the route running. So the decisions locally may not seem that intelligent. However, if you look at the whole citywide, it is trying to make a good decision for everybody.
And this is played out in the case where you're moving down, say, a street where you'd normally expect to get a combined set of 14 or 15 changes, and one in the middle, for some reason, is red. And you think, what's the logic of this?
A good master control system, you're only likely to stop once. That may be at the beginning, it may be at the midpoint, it may be near the end, but you're likely to only stop once. And we sort of call that the green wave. As you go down, the green wave is following you nicely in front of you.
But on
and
a Sunday,
can watch that.
On a Sunday, it hardly ever works. There are certain times of the day when I know when I'm going to various things that I'll stop four or five times going down.
And you've probably hit on it. Why are we worried on a Sunday? It's Sunday.
So it's
why do we want master control in the city? We're back to local intelligence, making local decisions.
So the piece of metal on that loop there is triggering the signal and it's saying, hold on, there's a bit of metal here, I'm going to make it green to let him get on his way.
Largely speaking. But the good thing about the sensor is not only does it notice that there is a bit of metal there right now, it also notices that there isn't a bit of metal. So we can look, if you like, the mark space ratio. So now you can argue, well, hey, if this road was flowing beautifully, we ought to be getting metal, gap, car, gap, car, gap.
So we'll also measure those flows as well.
Absolutely. We're measuring flow, not just the fact. So it's the on and the off time.
So this idea, because I tend to turn in the evening when I'm cruising around town, I flash my lights quite a bit to try and get them to change.
You shouldn't ought to do that. That's urban myth.
Is it? So there's no other ways I can hack the system. Can I?
No, hacking the system is almost completely impossible. Certainly never been possible in New Zealand.
But I mean, the other thing is to get a dirty, great big magnet, maybe, and on my push bike or something, and do multiple. I mean, can I play with the loop here? Can I do something to the loop?
Yeah, you probably could. You might get terrible tired. It might be much more simple just to wait there and. So, yes, you can generate false detections, and there are many good examples of that.
Back to the loop here. What's it made of? How deep
generally,
is it?
Generally speaking, it's four turns of ordinary copper wire, like you might have in wiring in your house. Nothing magic about it, just usually four turns of that.
How deep is it?
Oh, inch and a half,
inch
2 inches.
And a half. And they 50. Put that in when they're laying the roads, do they?
No, we'd usually saw cut them afterwards with a diamond saw, and then you just run a bit of wire around it four times.
And away it goes. Mm. Does the loop actually measure the type of vehicle or not, really? It's just looking at vehicles.
There's been work done on that. The most interesting one that's likely to come about is that these days with snapper card on board the buses, we actually know how many passengers are on board the bus. If the signal controller could gain that information, it could say, this is a bus with 40 passengers on board. That's actually got slightly more priority than that car in the other direction that's only got two. So there's quite a lot of work going on that. Can we make decisions on how important are the people waiting? And the best example of that is that if the bus is late and we know how many people are on it, we should give it priority. So a full bus of passengers that's running late should have a high priority.
What about if the PM wants to sort of nip through town? He's got a crunch meeting at the Beehive. He lands at the airport. Can he send a text and have you guys turn all the lights green?
No.
Can the Queen?
With foreplanning?
But you can manipulate the system to prioritise a green passage for one vehicle from woe to go.
Yep, there are a couple of cases where I've heard that done, and one in particular in Sydney where they brought a VIP in from Sydney Airport all the way into downtown Sydney, and I think there was 153 sets of signals, and it got through on 152 greens.
Well, should we head up and have a look at the master control?
We can indeed.
Brilliant. Yep. Okay. So how long have you been involved with sort of traffic and traffic lights?
Since about 1975.
And I guess they would have been seen as sort of at the forefront of sort of the technological traffic revolution when they first came out.
Well, they first came out long before me. I think the first set of New Zealanders circa about, I've forgotten the exact date. 1938 comes to my mind, and they are preserved in the Dunedin Town Hall. The first set of signals in New Zealand are actually on the wall somewhere in Dunedin in their museum or town hall.
So we're here at the City Council.
Hello, can we speak to Tim Kirby, please? He's expecting us. Simon and Wayne from Radio New Zealand.
Sorry, what was your name?
Simon and Wayne.
G'day, g'day. How are you going?
Good, thanks.
Well, we've just walked into a room which looks like a game player's paradise, but the images that I'm seeing on these screens, we've got, these are quite big flat screen TVs, monitors, aren't they? They're pretty hefty. And lo and behold, mainly traffic intersections.
That's right. We're taking a broad view of the traffic.
So this is the master system here.
That's right. We can control the signals through these computers.
So you don't have models of cars and lights and pedestrians. This is all done through a keyboard and mouse.
That's correct. Yeah, it's all computerised nowadays. We only intervene where we consider we can actually do something. Sometimes it's a capacity issue and the road is unable to take any more vehicles than it currently has, but there are instances where, say, there are breakdowns or
weather conditions.
Incidents. Sometimes weather conditions we might be able to do something about. It tends to be unusual scenarios, breakdowns or blockages in the road. Then we can enable an alternative route, and the signals can be adjusted to suit. Up to a point, they adjust by themselves.
Yeah, from my understanding, we look into this image here and there's an intersection here, as we have at this time of day, probably decisions are being made locally based on inputs and data being collected by the loop at this location. At other times of the day, this master control, SCATS, will take over and start to manage that as part of a broader network and take control of the city to do what's best for the city rather than the individual person waiting to cross the road there. Is that the case?
Yeah, generally SCATS is doing all the donkey work, so to speak. It's got the capabilities to do huge numbers of calculations, and so we really only need to intervene on a very occasional basis. The logic and the software is clever enough in SCATS to really do just about everything. We are monitoring and only intervening on a very occasional basis.
But is there a danger that, a bit like a shower, you know, when you're in a shower and you feel it's too hot, that then you tend to switch to cold, and if you're not careful, you seesaw between hot and cold before you find the exact midpoint that's comfortable. Is there a danger that if you respond to stuff immediately that you actually create problems, a ripple effect? Or is the system smarter than that?
It is possible to overreact to certain events and incidents, but with experience one can generally keep the water such that it's not going to burn anybody.
Keep it comfortable. So it sounds as if it's a science up to a point, and then there's a little bit of artistic sort of endeavour that comes in.
Yes.
And that's the experience of you, the operator, is it?
That's right. With experience you get a feel for what's going to work and just what's not practical.
And what are the levers here that you can pull exactly? What can you change from here?
We can change just about anything to do with traffic signals in terms of green times, the phasing arrangement or sequence. We can turn signals off and have done from time to time in order to promote flow, subject to retaining safety.
So you can double-click here and make a light go green or red, pretty much like that?
Pretty much, within certain safety parameters. For example, if there are pedestrians known to be crossing the road, then a certain time needs to be given to them to clear off the road before subsequent commands can be put into place by the system.
So does this room ever start to flash with big red lights and whoop, 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 or is it a bit more, do you just get a vibration on your cell phone?
Well, if a major signal outage occurs, for example, so if signals go to flashing amber, then an audible alarm will be generated. It's not quite the same as evacuating, but we respond.
Thank heavens. Tim Kirby, the Wellington City Council's Signals Project Manager. And thanks to Wayne King, the Senior Traffic Engineer with Hutt City Council.